CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal.
Hey, you. Come over here and listen.
Oh, God, I'm so fucking wet. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. Like that. Oh, God.
You can't hear me.
I would love your cock to be inside me. Oh, God, I'm really gonna come. I'm really gonna come. Oh, God, I'm so fucking wet. Can you see how wet I am? Can you see how wet I am? Oh, fuck. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
It's time for Audio Smut. It's time for Audio Smut. Smut, smut, smut.
Smut, smut, smut.
A queer, feminist, trans positive radio show about fucking in all its forms.
Four, five fingers.
Let's not beat around the bush. This show contains explicit sexual content.
So turn the volume all the way up.
Oh, that was so hot. I'm gonna pee for you now. Are you ready? Yeah, you wanna watch me pee? Oh yeah, I'm gonna pee, yeah.
Audio Smut, where we whisper all the dirty little fantasies and secrets in your ears.
Baby, come closer.
I like to finger
I like fuck. It when it hurts a little. Sometimes I like it when it hurts a lot. I
thought about fucking them for ages.
I just want to hear you say, and then I fuck me, it. Over and over again.
The sound of you moaning drives me fucking crazy.
Fuck the gender, please.
Spank me. Spank me.
Push me up against the wall and stick your dildo inside of me.
Let's just talk dirty to
science each other. Fiction,
fan fiction,
cyber sex,
role playing.
The taste of a sweaty girl in my mouth.
I love your scars and the way they look.
Put on your clothes.
When we're fucking.
Can I put on your lipstick?
All I can think about is your asshole. Kiss
Let's
my
play
neck
dress up
and blow softly.
Nipple torture.
I love waking up.
Spread your cheeks wide
to you
for
in
me
bed
and let me in.
You giggle.
Make me come.
Make me scream. Make me listen.
Hi everybody, you're listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's about 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. My name is Minuit and this is the aftercare show. So a few weeks ago, I sent a call out. I was looking for people's experiences about aftercare, stories, or whatever else they wanted to share. What was aftercare important for them? And it's not the first time that I've sent call-outs like that because I really enjoy doing radio shows that feel collective. However, this is the first time that we haven't received many prompts. We actually only received one. I think there's something about the Gemini season making this period of time very eclectic, busy. It's the end of the curfew. people are roaring with the new sense of liberty. So it's maybe not the time where people want to sit down at their desk and record or write something about this kind of experiences. However, talking to some people about the call-out, there's a few of my friends who were saying, well, actually, I think aftercare is really important, but I don't think I have anything to say. I don't have an aftercare practice myself. And that got me thinking. For me, I think that aftercare is one of the most important parts of any kind of intense emotional experiences. And so that's why I think it's very important to talk about it. The show is going to be exploring what aftercare is. You will listen to the one prompt we received, and there's going to be a lot of music. And while you'll be listening to the music, I hope you can take the time to think about what aftercare means for you, what it could mean, because let's start at the beginning. What aftercare is. Aftercare is the act or the process of taking care of someone after a very intense emotional or physical experience. So it's a concept that's coming from the BDSM world. Like, let's say after a really big emotional scene.
And aftercare is not only about taking care of someone else. It's also the process of taking care of yourself after a very important, intense activity, emotions. So it can be applied in the context of kink BDSM scenes, but a lot of other things in life can bring us to having intense emotional experiences or physical experiences. So at first, the concept was coming from the medical sector. How do you care for a patient after a medical treatment? But how do you care for yourself and for the person that you love after a very intense sexual experience? Or after a very important and hard and vulnerable conversation? It can be also after a moment where metamours, for example, in the context of a polyamory relationship, meet, or any kind of moment that you were looking forward with anticipation, because it was going to be uncomfortable. How are you going to close this chapter in order to build more resilience, more care, more space inside your body and the bodies of people that you love? It's the practice of saying, it's not only the act that matters, it's not only about what you get from that moment, it's also about how are you in relationship with one another after that moment in the process. And so we're going to investigate a little bit more what aftercare is later in the show.
So if you want to think about some of the prompts that I had sent during the music that's going to be playing, you can think about those prompts for yourself. What do you like to receive as an aftercare? What do you need? Do you have a solo aftercare practice for yourself? Do you want one? Is there one experience you would like to share that didn't happen the way you expected it would? Share with yourself. Rediscover. Why do you think aftercare is important?
I'll leave you to think of that while listening to Rocket by Beyoncé.
Show you how I feel. Let me take this off. Will you watch me? Let's mass appeal. Don't take your eyes. Don't take your eyes off it. Watch it, baby. If you like, you can touch it, baby. Do
way, bitch. Ooh, grab a hold, don't let go. Let me know that you're ready. I just want to show you now. Slow it down, go around.
You rock hard, I rock steady.
And rock right up to the side of my mountain. Climb until you reach my peak, babe. Peak, babe, peak. And reach right into the bottom of my mountain. I wanna play in your deep, babe. Deep, babe, deep. Then dip me under where you can feel my river flow and flow. Hold me till I scream, I'm here to breathe. Wash me over until my well runs dry. Send all your sins all over me, baby, me, baby, me. Rock it till water falls. Rock it till water falls. Rock it till water falls. Like it's my profession. I gotta make a confession. I'm proud of all this bass. Baby, I put it in your face. By the way, if you need a personal trainer or a therapist, I can be a piece of sunshine, inner peace, entertainer. Anything else that you may read between the lines, you and I create rockets and waterfalls. So rock right up to the side of my mountain. Climb until you reach my peak, babe, peak, babe, peak. And reach right into the bottom of my fountain. I wanna play in your deep, babe, deep, babe, deep. Then dip me under where you can feel my river flow and flow. Hold me till I scream. Wash me over until my well runs dry. Send all your sins all over me, baby, me, baby.
Hard, rock, steady, rock. Hard, rock, steady, rock. Hard, rock, steady, rock.
You know that I give you the loving. If you need it, I give you my word. You can believe it. Your love feels like all four seasons. We're growing inside me. Life has a reason. Pray we don't overflow. Baby, I know you can feel it pulse. Deep in the peak of my waterfall. Rock it, baby, rock it, baby, rock it till the waterfall.
Ending the scene and afterwards from The Bottoming Book by Delcie Istin and Janet Hardy. Closure. Alas, even the hottest scene must eventually come to an end. The best answer to the question, when do you end the scene, is when either partner wants to. If you're really enjoying yourself as a bottom, you may get to what Delcie calls the forever place, where you feel that you want to keep on doing this forever and ever and ever. A good top gives you some warning when the scene is drawing to a close, so you can start gradually withdrawing from the forever place and getting ready to come back into the real world. An excellent way to bring a flagellation, for example, to an end is for the top to announce, pick a number from 1 to 10, or 50, or 100. Then you know you're going to get that many strokes of the greatest intensity you can possibly take. So get ready for the big climax. The scene isn't over when the action stops either. It can take quite a while for both partners to decompress and be ready to deal with reality. Don't try too soon after a scene to do tasks that take concentration and focus, or to do detailed post-scene negotiations. Whether you know it or not, you're probably still a little spacey and a little bit in role. It's a good idea to learn what your decompression pattern looks like, so you can tell your tap what to expect. Dosi says, I sometimes get a little hyper. I want to talk, not sleep, but I'm really kind of stupid and I can't remember which goes on first, my stockings or my shoes. Janet says, I get verbal again right away, sometimes even making puns or jokes or acting a little smart-assed. And tops think I'm back, but I'm not. I'm emotionally very fragile. Closure is not a chore, except the picking up the toys part. It's an invaluable time for intimacy and closeness, part of the scene's rewards for both people. Your boundaries are down and it's going to take a while for them to come back up. Why not relax and enjoy it? Here are some of the ways we like to close and decompress. Having sex or an orgasm, taking a nice hot bubble bath, being put into a flannel nightie or PJs and tucked in, with the tub there to cuddle us. Doing something to get back up into our heads, like going to a movie, only somebody else better drive. Janet remembers, I'd done a submissive scene at a Saturday night party that put me way under. My tub had me sleep in my collar, and I woke up the next morning still deeper than the lost continent of Atlantis. I served him breakfast and sat on the floor at his feet reading the newspaper. And somewhere in the middle of the date book section, I drifted back up, thought, hey, wait a minute, this is me, and wanted the collar off right away. Having something to eat or drink together, Janet is notorious for craving donuts and milk after a scene. Moving around or doing something like taking a walk together. Curling up for a snuggle to savor the connection. Later. After you're both pretty sure you're back to your day-to-day selves, you might want to talk briefly about the scene. What worked for you, what didn't, what you'd like to try next time. But we suggest you leave the detailed discussion for the following day, when you're 100% yourself again. Even if the scene went badly, try not to be judgmental or harsh in discussing it with your top. It's virtually certain that she was doing her best. Be constructive, and be sure to talk about those aspects of the scene that did work for you. And don't forget to express your appreciation and affection. Remember, topping, like bottoming, entails a significant emotional risk. One good reason to try topping, if you can, is so you can experience firsthand the vulnerable feeling it entails. We once heard of a therapist who explained, the subconscious doesn't understand consensuality. Your top is engaging in activities that at some level are scary and guilt-producing. A harsh or critical judgment from you can be devastating. If you want to criticize, do so gently and use a lot of I and me statements. Not, the clamps were awful, but the clamps didn't work for me. Good tops can hear feedback, and good bottoms can offer it without blaming or guilt-tripping. Work constructively with your top toward figuring out what can be improved, so you can have an even better, hotter scene next time. When the game is over. Doing BDSM can be so fulfilling, so magical, so extraordinary that we hate to see our scene end. The desire to stay in role or to go on experiencing these marvelous sensations can be so compelling that we feel anger toward the partners or toward the pressing real-world issues that make us need to stop and go back into our day-to-day personas. Remember, tops may have a forever place too. The feeling of being invulnerable, in control, impervious, is very compelling. Help your top stay flexible enough to come out of role by making sure that he is, or they are, or she is sure of your friendship and affection, even when he shows vulnerability. Tops sometimes worry that you're only interested in their top persona and not in their real-world persona. Similarly, as bottoms, we feel that one of the wonderful things about play is that it gives us a safe place in which to be boundary-less and will-less, a vacation from the responsibilities of everyday life. We hope this book will help you develop the flexibility to be able to assert your boundaries and make your own decision outside scene space, and the ability to return from scene space to the rest of your life, so that giving up power in scene is a delicious contrast and a safe adventure.
Regardless.
Listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM. It must be about 6:30. My name is Minuit, and you're listening to the Aftercare Show. So the next thing you're going to hear is the only prompt that I received in my call-out. It's been sent by Mistress Isabel. So let's hear what Mistress Isabel thinks, feels about aftercare. My aftercare is money. Big, thick wads of it. I can't fit into my wallet, so it's crammed in my gym bag full of used, sticky sex toys. I head to the prettiest cafe I can find near their hotel. Order a tiny sweet cake with tea and flip through the pictures I took of them in compromising positions. I'll send them a couple after I edit earth emojis over their face. And they can remember what I gave them and they'll start their craving over again. My aftercare is money. Filling system of blank white envelopes in my underwear drawer. Rent, tax, tuition, phone, clothes, savings. Clutching the neat pile of green, pink, and brown notes close to me to feel the growing stock, and then sliding everything everywhere all over the bed, a mess of success made from piss and spit and cum, and I'm snapping high-res photos of my tits and open holes festooned in rainbow-colored folding paper money. I send them to my friends. They send ones back. My aftercare is money, honey. I eat smoked salmon straight out of back. I get a cab to the pool and back. I buy art made by my friends. I like my shorts with tasseled hems. They go back to their lives to work so they can pay me to enjoy mine. By Mistress Isabel.
Is your favorite color blue? 'Cause you something like my crib tonight. I want you to maybe meet me at my crib tonight. Might not be the one, but I'm definitely the prototype. Let's get down and get it on the floor, floor. Wanna be a friend you can keep.
I wanna be a friend you can keep.
Hi everyone, you're listening to the Aftercare Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, and this is Audio Smut. My name is Minuit. The two previous songs that you heard on the show was Roads by Portishead and F-U-C-K by Victoria Mona. I love her sound, it's so beautiful. I hope you've been enjoying the music so far. It's the first time that I make a musical show like that. But I definitely think that it was important to have a show with more space in order to talk about the lack of resources and of knowledge that exist about aftercare in all its form. Why is it important? Well, let's talk about emotional drop, what is understood or called sub drop or dumb drop in the BDSM world, but that I think definitely happens in other circumstances, and I hope you're going to be able to recognize yourself in this. So what is a sub drop? It's an emotional and physical low, a biochemical reaction that begins anywhere from a few hours to a few days after an emotional endorphin high and can last hours to weeks. When your sub drop hits, you might not notice if you're not actively trying to be happy, but you'll be more sensitive to fluctuations in stress hormones and other emotionally relevant hormones that aren't the happy hormones. This is where the emotionally volatile experience comes in. Obviously, our bodies are not identical. We process these hormones at different speeds and we produce these hormones differently. Even if you have the same high-inducing experience, your body will react differently afterward. This is why you don't always experience updrop, or you experience milder or more severe cases, even if you did everything possible to minimize the potential drop. It's interesting to note that sub or dumb or top drop, depression and burnout are all closely linked because they all involve a lack of happy hormones and an excess of stress hormones. But there are subtle differences. With burnout, you've allowed the stress hormones to be so high for so long that your body is completely overwhelmed, which impacts your physical and mental health. Depression is a more long-term low with lower dips, while sub or top or dumb drop is an acute reaction to a very specific experience. It's important to note that if we are talking about the BDSM experience, scene or whatever, dumb have drops too. Sometimes we have this idea that the person receives the physical intensity, the physical sensations, is the one who's going to have the drop, and then is going to be the one whose need we're going to have to cater to. However, everyone is together, both roles, or more roles, if there's like more people involved, are together in this experience, this very vulnerable experience. However, in the context of an agreed and consented relationship that you do together, let's say you decide that you do a BDSM scene, the relationship and the scene doesn't end at the end of the action. And there is some sense of responsibility of staying with the person in some capacity, not necessarily physically, but relationally, emotionally. So to be sure that everyone comes back home, like inside your home, into your new normal in a very safe way. However, sometimes it is possible that both people have drops at the same time. Hence, that's why it's important to have multiple sources of support or other ways of filling those needs. And with time, you can know better what your needs are. And then you can try to plan a bit in advance what you could be doing or how you could be filling those needs, or maybe putting some time aside in your week to be able to do that aftercare. So what can an aftercare look like? There's different moments, definitely, in the aftercare experience. There's just after the moment, just after the scene. Let's say people want to attend to very specific needs. So you want to get dressed, get warm, drink water, eat food, probably have cuddles. If it's your thing, some people it's not your thing. Try to bring a sense of safety in your body. After that, it's going to be very different, and that's where you need to figure out what would make you feel better. Some examples are people that have been involved in a scene will take the time to talk about what they liked about it, to validate each other, to thank each other. After a scene, for example, if it's after an emotional conversation, you can take a time to say what you feel grateful for, thanking the other person for specific ways and how they've been listening, how they've been present. If it's an intense emotional or sexual experience, it can also look like staying a bit longer just to see if there are some kind of emotions or feeling that can arise that will need some reassurance, to talk it through, that kind of stuff. So that's more for directly after a big experience. Afterward, if you have that kind of relationship, it can be interesting to spend more time with a person to see, help them come through to their normal state, do some casual, low expectation time together, just to feel like there was like the time before, the intense emotional experience, and then you're back to normal, to just being yourself. In the following days is when the actual drop might come. Sometimes having had these moments before, attending to the needs, is going to help a lot with the drop, but sometimes it has nothing in common, and for whatever reason, something happened. That day you feel more fragile, more vulnerable, that week. It's a culmination of a lot of different things. It comes without saying that it's not really recommended to do intense scene if you already feel a bit fragile, if your emotional state is not really anchored, but you are the one who's responsible of yourself and what you feel comfortable doing or not, definitely. So in the following days, there are different things or tools that you can do to cater to your own aftercare, and things that you can ask someone else to help you in your aftercare. I would like to say first that these things, the things that you want to do with someone else, are things that should be negotiated and things that you cannot take for granted. And so when you're discussing about, let's say, in the BDSM world, a scene that you want to do, you want to take the time to talk about what the person's capacity is in relationship to tending to your needs after the scene. Sometimes if you're not compatible in your aftercare strategies or needs, maybe you're not a good match to play together. Or maybe you're not a good match in your aftercare needs, but you're able to fulfill your needs on your own or with other friends, other partners, and that makes it okay. So you're the one who decides. In an article by Ariana Golden in 2020 that was published on Medium called Experiencing Subdropped, she gave a few ideas of aftercare things you could be doing. She says, learn to manage your thoughts. Actively challenge negative thinking and replace it with positive statements and repeat them in your mind. If you can, set up coaching, therapy, or counseling for the days after you have been with your partner. She's referencing to aftercare for non-monogamy or attachment issues, and the same applies for kink, for other kind of stuff. She says, physical touch and comfort. This might include using weighted blankets if you're alone, sensual bath, massage, and masturbation. Reach out to your partners for emotional reassurance and validation about specific negative thoughts you're having. She says chocolate because for people with vulva, it's great to produce estrogen, which makes you more stress resilient, but to ration it, to not create more surges and emotional volatile environment. And finally, plan for the emotional low by organizing the days after you see your partner, or for example, after you have a scene or a big intense experience conversation, to include connection with friends, self-care activities, and exercise that will help offset any kind of emotional drop you've been experiencing. And so that kind of list of self-care activity is something, you know, everyone should have, like, somewhere to access in terms of needs. So I highly encourage you to do this. And I encourage you to have patience, compassion for yourself and for people that you love that are involved in this experience with you. When you are in that state of emotional drop, it's easy to be looking for all the signs that tells you you're in danger. But please don't react in this context. Try to act out of your best self in a centered, regulated body. And then, time after time, by learning how to create and build safety in your body, it's probably going to get easier to come in and out of these spaces. So now you're going to listen to Your Heart is a Twisted Vine by Marissa Nadler. Take care of yourself.
Your heart is a twisted vine.
Readings from My Grandmother's Hands by Risma Menachem. Here is a chapter talking about clean pain and dirty pain and an anchor system to help you navigate through it. Clean pain is about choosing integrity over fear. It's about letting go of what is familiar but harmful, finding the best parts of yourself, and making a leap with no guarantees of safety or praise. This healing does not happen in your head. It happens in your body. And it is more likely to happen in a body that can stay settled in the midst of conflict and uncertainty. When you come out the other side of this process, you will experience more than just relief. Your body will feel more settled and present. There will be a little more freedom in it and more room to move. You will experience a sense of flow. You will also have grown up a notch. What will your situation look like when you come out the other side? You don't know. You can't know. That's how the process works. You have to stand in your integrity, accept the discomfort, and move forward into the unknown. The alternative path of avoidance, blame, and denial are paved with dirty pain. When people respond from their most wounded parts and choose dirty pain, they only create more of it, both for themselves and for other people. Risma talks about clean pain and dirty pain in the context of collective racialized trauma and the processes toward the healing of that racialized trauma. He talks about this in the context of about the process of mending white supremacy by moving through clean pain, discomfort, and feeling our feelings to transform our bodies and be able to create anti-racist cultures. He is a Black somatic therapist, and I believe that this concept of anchoring is very important in any other context, and that we can transfer this concept of clean pain to aftercare and all the hard feelings that you can have at the end of a very important moment, scene, conversation. However, I invite you to go discover his work. If you're touched by his content about clean pain and dirty pain, I encourage you to maybe ask yourself and consider doing this work about white supremacy and discovering the dirty pain that you might hold toward the racialized trauma that you may still keep in your body. So he continues talking about this process and says, "The particulars of moving through clean pain are unique to each person and each incident. However, the process can be described and navigated. The process involves 5 steps. Each one anchors you in the present and, most importantly, in your body. I refer to them as the 5 anchors. Anchor 1. Soothe yourself to quiet your mind, calm your heart, and settle your body. Anchor 2. Simply notice the sensations, vibrations, and emotions in your body instead of reacting to them. Anchor 3. Accept the discomfort and notice when it changes instead of trying to flee from it. Anchor 4. Stay present and in your body as you move through the unfolding experience with all its ambiguity and uncertainty, and respond from the best part of yourself. Anchor 5. Safely discharge any energy that remains. In this chapter, Risma describes more in depth how to go through each of these anchors. I encourage you to go and find it, read about it, experience it. And this is all for today's show. You are listening to Audio Smut on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Minui, and this is the Aftercare Show. I hope you've learned a lot of different things about what aftercare means and how it can apply to your own context. May it be after intense emotional conversation or experiences, physical experiences, kink scenes, attachment, conflict, or sexual, emotional, intense experience. Some prompts that you can think about are: what do you like to receive as an aftercare? What do you need? Do you have a solo practice? What could it look like? What can you learn from experiences where you didn't feel good or held? What could be different? Why is aftercare important for you? See you next month. And I'm leaving you with the Be Good Tanya's When Doves Cry.
You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
CKUT. On the air. CKUT.
Good evening and welcome to Amandla, 1 hour of African Affairs, brought to you here on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, CKUT.ca around the world. I am sitting here virtually with Doug Miller, and Doug, boy, you really took it away this week again with a focus on Mozambique, a place I hold very dear to my heart. Tell us more.
All of us who were involved in the anti-apartheid struggle had nothing but great admiration for Samora Machel, and the music you heard at the beginning was him leading the singing of a large crowd of Mozambicans, and Alan.